Hey there, White Sox fans. It is Sox Populi podcast number 173. You're probably sitting home thinking, boy, I wonder when we're going to see another podcast from the mothership, Southside Sox. And, you know, all it took was trading the franchise pitcher and ace to get us out of whatever closets we've been resting and relaxing in before the season starts. Gosh, it's only 2 weeks away, and I know we're all very, very, very eager for it to start. With me to discuss, some recent happenings, I suppose, is the freshly coiffed Dante Jones, the disembodied head of Brian O'Neill, and, of course, Melissa Sage Mullenbach, soon to be hosting her very own podcast. But we're going to just keep that, maybe we won't keep it under wraps. Maybe the second half of the podcast, we'll just discuss, we'll discuss new podcasts coming to the Sox Populi family. Or we'll be cussing a lot. I'm not sure. I have very little, unlike Melissa, I have few notes. It's technically a blank.
You're supposed to have notes? I know about notes.
Yeah. See, Melissa just laughs us, you know.
I have to have notes.
But see, the thing is, we've told her there's like every time we tell her there's a test, so she prepares. And then we show up, we're like, test? Come on, there's no pop quizzes here. This is Sox Pop, not pop quizzes. Well, welcome all. We are going to talk, first off, somehow we avoided the breaking emergency, let's freak out, five alarm podcast last night, which I'm sure a lot of other people, places, and things did. Nothing wrong with that at all, but, you know, hey, why try to cut through that noise? Why not just wait a day so everybody can settle down, everybody's blood pressure perhaps has returned maybe more than normal, and we can, you know, discuss a trade of the sole name pitcher on the Chicago White Sox all the way to the West Coast calmly and rationally, or not. We'll see. The trade, of course, Dylan Cease. Let me repeat facts that you already know. Dylan Cease sent away, as long rumored, because Lord knows the White Sox, you know, don't want to keep stars. And this season's been long lost, and now it's really lost. All right, we'll get to wins predictions by the end of the podcast, I suppose. To San Diego for prospects and a spare pen arm named Stephen Wilson, I think it is. He'll fill in the pen because the White Sox have a lot of arms, but then really they sort of have no arms, especially when we talk about healthy arms or healthy legs. It's a mess. It's a 60-win team at best, but again, we'll get to that. Headliner Drew Thorpe, fifth, I believe, rated prospect for the Padres, which technically, doing the algebra, that should mean number one with a bullet with the White Sox. I don't think it quite translates that way. He could be as high as two with the White Sox. Really, sorry, Noah Schultz, sorry to you, but we may have a new top arm in the organization. Consider that a challenge, young man. Jairo Iriarte, who we had much debate about staff-wise today about when he should be coming up. Chris Getz thinks a guy who has barely sipped coffee in AA, not to great acclaim, will be pitching in the major leagues this year. Some of our staff thought that sounded reasonable. Some thought Chris Getz was smoking something. I don't know what the truth is. We can discuss that shortly. Of course, the fourth piece and the sole hitter, lefty hitter, and to the relief of Super Joseph Rieses, there's a Zavala back in the White Sox organization. His name is Samuel, and who knows if he will hit three home runs in his first major league game, or his first home run will be a three home run game. You know, Joe could say it better than me. He's not here to defend himself. But we do have a new Zavala for Joe to fanboy. So that's awesome, too. That right there makes the trade win. So initial impressions or impressions now of the San Diego Padres trade, the inevitable sending away of Dylan Cease, sort of a shocker. It ended up being San Diego. They sort of came in late there and apparently outbid Texas Rangers, New York Yankees, and whoever else. How are we feeling about this trade?
Personally, I'm fine with it because I remember the Jose Abreu situation where they ended up getting nothing for him. The Tim Anderson situation where they ended up getting nothing for him. Mm-hmm. And yeah. It's like, at least they tried this time. And we got some prospects. They might be close to ready. You know, I don't know if this guy that's, like you said, barely been in double A is going to be ready this season, because that just seems like blowing smoke up our behinds. But, you know. You know,
it's been training, so yeah. Blow the smoke.
Yeah, like, we could be in a spot where these dudes are providing value to the big league team this season. We'll see. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting trade. We have to see what Dylan Cease does when he's in San Diego, because we're getting a win in this trade. We'll see. This we can't judge a trade on less than 48 hours after it happens. We have to give it a few years at this point.
Oh, great. Dante's just blown the whole purpose of the podcast out of the water. All right, see you, everybody. It was fun talking to you. I spent 90% of the time talking, so apologies to my guests for that. But sorry. Hey, we got to go. Dante pulled the plug on it. Yeah, no, good point. The odds are nice. I mean, you've got three pretty prime prospects, and really, if even one pans out, you figure this could be a draw of a trade. I don't know how reminiscent this is going to be of the Chris Sale trade, where technically the White Sox won that trade. It's really in the balance at this point, but in theory, they could still sort of easily win that trade, just in terms of pure war. But then, of course, Sale won a World Series, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll see what. We'll see if Dylan Cease can turn around those underachieving San Diego Padres out there on the coast. But
you mean West Coast White Sox? Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Padres fans are angry now. I can hear the phones ringing.
They're definitely better than the White Sox. But in terms of the underachieving, yeah, it seems kind of familiar now.
I mean, wins per dollar, that's at best maybe a toss-up. So, yeah, not a crazy point.
Again, the smoking us, but like, it's because they have more talent right now. And also, we folded. They didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we did. Ours was voluntary. Yeah! Okay. Melissa, Brian, where are you at with it?
Me? Okay, sorry. I don't want to talk for too long. There are kind of three aspects to the trade, and we've touched on all of them. I mean, it's Dante said how Cease is going to do, how the prospects are going to do, and I think one thing I want to get into right now is, like, Dante, you mentioned it, like, how much Chris Getz is just blowing smoke up our ass. Like, that's the question of does Getz, how much of his job does he see right now as public relations, and how much does he see as building a ball club? Jerry, everyone's still saying we're contending, don't go away from us, we're building a new ballpark, we're great. So it seems like I'm trying to still figure out if Getz believes what he says, or if he knows he just has to say it while still building a club. Because if he's building a club, like, I'm going to defer to our very own Selina Ray. Like, I was reading her analysis of this on Twitter. She knows way more about baseball and prospects than I do. And she said, you know, I'm going to quote her, "Both pitchers aren't insanely far away from being MLB ready. If Getz wants a contention window towards the latter half of Luis Robert's prime, this trade might look flat out brilliant." I don't know enough about the play. I mean, Thorpe, obviously, it seems like he's close. The Yankees traded him for Juan Soto. I mean, that's a, you know, we essentially
not nothing.
We were had seats at the table for the Juan Soto trade after everyone had cleared the dishes.
Exactly. Kind of, they showed up to the party late, but they showed up.
Yeah. So if this is what gets his planning, regardless of what he says, and I'm hoping he says stuff that he just thinks we need to hear, like, "Oh no, these guys are close to major league ready. We're going to do good this year," but is actually planning for the second half of Luis Robert Jr.'s prime. I don't know. It looks good. I mean, these are good, potentially very good players. I mean, Savala is the one I'm most excited about. Like, well, he can actually play outfield and maybe hit. He strikes out a lot, but he's got a really good, he's got pretty good discipline when he's not swinging and missing. He swings and misses a lot from what I understand, but he doesn't swing outside the strike zone, which is always really good, especially for an 18-year-old. So, yeah, there's potential. I don't want to see anyone but Thorpe this year, but
okay. What's funny about Getz is that, you know, I mean, it takes a very special individual, whether a manager, a player, executive, to really be able to play this, you know, amazingly. It's almost like you should go into broadcast. You should be in a different profession if you could do this as well as we all sort of think these people should. It's just funny to me that Getz even feels a need to – he already – you know, he made this trade where – the Padres' talent, a trio there must have equaled and certainly bettered what had been out there. He chose the deal rather than waiting to the trade deadline, et cetera. He must have really thought this would strike and fill needs. The idea that you've sort of got to like add in the thing where it's like, yeah, we expect to see him this year, even though he's very young. You know, he almost seems, I mean, he's got maybe a more powerful arm, but he's like, I won't say like a Juan Corella for us. And he's like our 20th prospect or something. And that guy's really good. So it's just funny that now this guy's like,
you don't have to do that.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be buy one, get one. It could just be like, hey, you know, I'm happy with this deal and you'll see, I know we all like demand more, but some of it does end up bringing hollow because it's like, oh, okay. And then it almost makes you think, all right, well now do I feel good about him? If he's really saying this, oh gosh, maybe I'm not comfortable with this trade or this guy making the trades because he's going to kill this kid.
Without waiting till the deadline, like, that's the big question. Do we think that Cease was unlucky last year with Bat? The guy who's really only had one good, great year only have that? So who knows? Mm-hmm. If we wait to the deadline, we might have gotten peanuts or we might have gotten,
Giolito, a good example, because he could have maybe even demanded if he just had a killer salary drive season, even better than he had, it could have been better for the Sox, or he could have been like, we can't give this guy away, if he had, another one of those years. So, yeah, it's dicey. If everybody's like, oh, yeah, you should wait. You should play chicken. That's terrifying. Okay, Melissa, it's your turn. We're back on the hair team. We've gone full circle now. So give me some thoughts. I know initially, I think you were giving it some raspberries. I don't know if things have settled down for you or not, but where are you at with this deal?
Yeah, I'm an emotional person. So like when I first heard it, of course, I was like super sad because I'm like, I like Dylan the person. And like, he's done quite a few interviews with Chuck Garfine this spring where he's just been like super goofy. And he like seems like he's really like come into his own in terms of like leadership. Like some of the younger guys, I think it was Nick Nastrini and Jordan Leisure were like talking about how Cease has really kind of like taken them under his wing and like, kind of made them feel comfortable in big league camp and everything. So I was like, he's coming to his own. And just as all that's happening, like he's gone. And so then I was sad. And then I didn't really know enough about the prospects, but I was reading what other people were saying. I was like, oh, it looks like we got fleeced. So then I was really mad. And then I was thinking about like really all that the trade represents, like that the failure of the original rebuild. Yeah. So then that like kind of came into play. And then today when I sat down and actually kind of started looking through these guys, and there's four of them. And so we've got like, one in four chance that we'll get a gem. And so, those are pretty good chances. And like Brian was saying, Dylan has had really one outstanding season. So maybe we sold high and, we get more than one of these guys that hit. And it's just the whole thing of like, now we just have to be patient and wait and see. And like, I'm kind of sick of being patient to wait and see. And now, we're probably realistically 2026 before any of, these guys are making a real contribution, like significant. And so, that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. We've all known, because we're clever, right? We've all known the contention window has been shut and dead, for years now. But and I won't say this really officially like slams it shut, because I think that's probably also happened. Maybe that was a trade deadline last year. I don't know. It's probably earlier than that. But basically when there's almost nobody on the team who you can, pronounce the name of, it's pretty dead. And, full rebuild, free fall now, maybe into the 50 win level. Again, we'll discuss that later, I suppose. That's depressing. Because, let's face it, we got ripped off. I mean, two playoffs, one real playoffs. That playoffs was excessively underwhelming, even though there was actually a win. So, something, something to celebrate there. But that's lame, especially at a time where, you know, there's more playoffs. I mean, you know, this isn't, you know, 83 when you first became a fan, Melissa, or, you know, this is even the old days of like, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago where, you know, you got to scrape your way in and it's an achievement to be, I mean, we're getting toward what, a third, not half, but a third of the teams making the playoffs. So, I mean, even that is an achievement. And one of those playoffs the Sox made, half the teams literally did make the playoffs, and the White Sox still managed to vomit that away. So, yeah, the fact that this is, like, really official kaput, you know, no offense to Luis, but, I mean, you know, this team is just floundering now is, yeah, I mean, that's – even though we all know it, we're all just trying to do the math and, like, adjust our wins from, you know, like 65, 55, what is it going to be? I mean, you know, there ain't no 75s in there. There's no 85s in there, so – yeah, we got at least a year of, yeah, just absolute pain. Brian mentioned Brian and I will speak in the absence of Super Joseph Reese's. Both of them are most excited about Samuel Zavala from this trade. And let's face it, it's not really a four-pack of winners given that Owen Wilson's just an arm to, you know, fill in the pen this year and, you know, whatever. That's great because White Sox need that. That's terrific. I'm sure that was a throw-in that gets demanded before he made the trade because he just like needs humans who are alive to play. But among the three, back to Dante, and then I'll get to you, Melissa. Who is standing out as maybe the most intriguing, you know, of this catch?
I still lean with Zavala because if it hits. Left-hand bat always can be useful. And plus, he plays center field. I'm sure he can play a corner later on. Mm-hmm. Like, have – or switch Luis Robert into a corner, you know, considering we still have to deal with having Benintendi for another year or two at least. We might have to see all three of them in outfield.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's not going anywhere anytime soon, sad to say. All right. Well, first in Dante's heart among the Zavalas, second in Joe's, but that's fine. Okay. Another vote for Zavala. Melissa, now that you've settled down and sort of looked over a little bit of stuff about these guys and tried to get a little excited about it, any one of the three jumping out at you?
Yeah, I want to be excited about the Zavala, but he's so young, like 19, like, I don't know. I have a hard time like getting too excited about those really young guys who are coming right out of high school, you know? So I think Drew Thorpe, I mean, he is the kind of the headliner in this and, you know, he has his change is rated as 70. So, I mean, that's pretty killer. So I think that, I mean, he has control too, like his walks per nine is like above average. And, you know, I think he has the tools, he has the control. So if we just don't find some way to screw him up, I think he could definitely be a good solid arm in our starting five. And so to me, again, not really knowing what Dylan Cease we were going to get, were we going to get another year of ace Dylan Cease or we were going to get last year's Dylan Cease? I mean, this guy could literally replace Dylan Cease, but he's younger and we have him under control for a lot longer. So to me, I'm really crossing my fingers on him and hoping that, that Bannister has really saw something in him and that we just don't find some way to screw him up. Like we seem to manage to screw most of our prospects up.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that. And the good news is he's still in the minors, so he has time to work on the facial hair and mustache game so he can really perhaps be a Dylan Cease equal. Let's not overlook Drew Thorpe here. He was the best minor league pitcher in the Yankees organization. He was minor league baseball pitcher of the year. I don't know if that means like just that or even just, let's face it, in the Yankees system, that's good enough for me. I mean, that's like six White Sox, you know, I mean, you know, so that's not something to sleep on. And the idea that Getz says, we'll see him this year. Well, yeah, okay, I'll buy that. You know, he hasn't even pitched in AAA yet, but I think he's going to sort of shoot through that.
My big concern with Drew Thorpe is that I don't think I'll ever not think that that's a name for a third baseman or an outfielder. Mm. It just sounds. I never
kind of hear that. That definitely gives me big outfield corner vibes.
Right. Yeah. But it's the White Sox, so he might play outfield at some point.
What wasn't that a famous football player though? Like,
yeah, Jim Thorpe.
True, Jim Thorpe. Yes. Okay. And
that's it. Picture like some big corn-fed. Yeah.
He is a pretty big guy, so.
So okay, yeah. Well then, yeah.
This isn't going to be a good offense this year. There may be opportunities. He may get to break in first as a two-way player. And then they're like, okay, we have an opening in the, you know, somebody else's arm fell off, so you can start pitching now. But yeah, who knows?
You got it, honey.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. Poor Jairo. Nobody can pronounce your name, and you don't get picked as the guy, even though Chris Katz thinks you're going to be on the south side this year. Sorry, Jairo. Jeez. But he was the eighth prospect in the Padres system. So, I mean, it's three top 10 Padres guys, which is like, okay, three sole team top 10 guys. But, you know, the Padres just find them and then they just give them away and then they find more. You know, I don't know if they're quite the Dodgers, but they're just these systems, these organizations that like know how to find players. And then there's the White Sox. So then you find the White Sox having to sort of beg at the door of teams like the Padres or, you know, Dodgers or whoever.
I want to be excited about him. I mean, he's got great stuff, but I think I'm kind of in the middle with what Melissa was saying with kids who are young and like Thorpe is much closer and the whole White Sox thing of developing pitchers. So it's hard for, like, I think in theory, he actually might be the most exciting one there because it seems like he has amazing stuff. It seems like it just, he could be a great pitcher, but I have more trouble getting excited about us developing someone like him.
You don't have to finish that. Us developing is where the period goes at the end of the sentence. Right. I'm sorry to say, even though we're supposed to be hopeful and optimistic. Hey, and let's not overlook the fact this guy is approaching 100 on the gun. And, I mean, big deal. I'm more of a like, hey, I want to be a 1950s fan, and I want pitchers to pitch, and I don't want it to be maximum effort every single pitch. I don't like this era. Well, let's not overlook the fact that the White Sox, especially if you eliminate bullpen arms, I'm not sure they have starters who do that. The fact that Garrett Crochet is getting back there is like making waves. Because let's not forget,
like the White Sox and power pitching haven't been a thing in a while.
Yeah,
yeah. Like Lance Lynn as hard as was going like what 98. Like,
maybe.
Yeah, Gio Cease will get up there every once in a while, but like that wasn't the forte.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be nice to finally have a power pitcher.
That would be nice.
Yeah, you can harness that. And, I mean, you know, obviously he's got some control stuff, but when you can throw 100 miles, you know, first of all, you better get control. You're gonna kill somebody. But, I mean, yeah, that's a nice place to be starting. You can, you know, the White Sox, you know, they're going to screw something up. But, I mean, you know, there's not a whole lot for them to have to. It's just sort of like, okay, there's the plate. I mean, it's not like, okay, here's how we can, you know, get maybe more out of your – here's generate more out of your legs. Or whatever. It seems like he's doing it. He wakes up out of bed, wiffle ball, 16-inch baseball. He's chucking 100 miles an hour. So, you know, that's – it's not a bad thing to have in your pocket. So, all right, you know, I suppose a pretty nice fetch. Do we feel just because Getz pulled the trigger at this somewhat odd time, let's face it, do we feel like this was the deal that he couldn't pass up on? Was he just sort of getting tired of this being a storyline? Or did he really jump at something that was considerably better than Yankees, Rangers, other teams might have been offering? What's the feeling about the timing of this and whether there might have been better deals, out there?
I think this is probably the best deal that he's gotten so far. I mean, four players to me, that even though we got five for Aaron Bummer, but I feel like four, you know, pretty high prospects in a good system, because I was kind of digging around. I just don't know a lot about National League ball. And like these guys, like they went from, I think it was like a year ago, their system was like 23. And then a year later, it was like in the top five. They do that like consistently. They're rotating people through all of the time. And so, like, I think they are just known to have, like, a really solid system. And with being offered these four players and a couple of them on the cusp of showing up in the bigs, I do think this was probably the best he was going to get. And I personally think he just wasn't willing to roll the dice and see what was going to happen with Cease. He was riding him hot. He's had a great spring. And so he was showing everybody, like, look what he can do. And he just was not willing to let him implode once, you know, the season started, because I would think it's going to get into pitchers' heads once the season starts and the team is just awful. Like, how do you not get sucked into that?
Yeah.
And so I think the writing on the wall of how awful they're going to be, like, I mean, just getting murdered all spring, basically, except for these last few games. Mm. Like, it was going to be clear that we're going to be really, really bad. And how does that not rub off on even your star pitcher, I think? So I think he was just like, he's doing great. Here you go.
Rip the Band-Aid off. Yep. Yep. Brian, Dante, thoughts here? Did you just say go? Do you flip a coin, or did San Diego come pretty hard late?
I think San Diego came hard. They know that their contention window is closing. I think Melissa nailed it. I mean, he's had a great spring. His last start was fantastic, and that was probably the highest point it's going to get. I can say it better than Melissa. I think this is what they're going to get. I did want to say before I forget that Ryan said they wanted me to say that they were nonplussed about the trade. I just want to give them credit for using it correctly, that they're not sure how to react. Most people use that to mean I'm indifferent towards it.
Oh, okay. But
the actual correct definition is I don't know how to react. So Ryan wanted to make sure that, you know, they got in that they said that. So
okay,
I personally am using it wrong, and I'm nonplussed about gets okay. his decision.
Yeah. Okay. Next lesson will be titled versus entitled, but that'll be for next podcast. Dante, your thoughts about how this all shook out? Do we sort of trust that gets sort of maximized the haul?
I think he maximized the haul. I do think it was late because it was just a case of, well, at this point in spring, usually you don't see things like this.
Mm-hmm.
Last time we saw something like this was even later into spring, with the AJ Pollock trade.
And that was another regime. Boy, it's going to be a long podcast if we have to also shout at Rick Hahn. So, you know, I guess
we'll give him like a few months off.
Oh, yeah, it'll come back because Eloy will get caught in the fishing net or something crazy will happen and somehow Rick will come up. You know what? San Diego fans, I mean, you don't think of them as fans. You know, for some reason, we all sort of think of San Diego as a small market. They're not really that small. I mean, I'm they're dwarfed, of course, by LA, but they're not really small market, even though they're always been sort of like lumped there. And the fan attitude certainly isn't that. They are a spicy fan base. I mean, we got a tweet just a few hours ago from someone, presumably a Padres fan. A few people have been circulating Luke Smale's piece he did after the season that basically said what went wrong. He did one with Kopech, too, as well. I think he planned to do more because, well, basically, he could have done 35 of them. But, you know, he just tried to, you know, pick the biggest highlights. And you know, just basically examine what happened with Dylan Cease. In fact, the piece itself is pretty positive. It's like, you know, it's a little bit more of a mirage. It looks a lot worse than it is. The back of the baseball card stats are pretty spooky and creepy with like the ER and stuff. But, you know, the defense was horrible, bad luck and so on. So it actually was sort of a positive piece. Of course, people comment all the time. I mean, hey, I'm guilty of it. Probably anybody's guilty of it. But, you know, commenting without reading. But it's like, you know, we didn't just like decide, oh, let's get angry at this trade. So let's publish an article that says Dylan Cease sucks. I mean, you know, I'm a clown, but I'm not sure that I would make that particular clown move. So I did have to let that spicy red-assed San Diego Padres fan know. No, that was written like weeks, months ago. And it was actually just, you know, an evaluation of his season that was sort of actually upbeat. So chill out. Be happy you got a guy who's never going to miss a start. He's got a great mustache and is an absolutely bizarre, bizarre, bizarre individual. So have fun with that for a couple years. You know?
I mean, also, like, here's the thing. The date is right at the top. Of things.
You don't really have to read. You can just click and read the top.
One of the first things you see. I've written a good chunk of articles for this publication. And been on a good chunk of podcast every single time. You can sort it by date.
But my favorite is when people get hot about like a parody article, and it's like, you know, again, if you just click on, I'm sorry, we can't like put it on Twitter, that, you know, it's a gag, but if you do actually just click the link, it says offbeat or satire, like right at the top. It's, you don't have to work as hard to find the date,
but it's easy.
It makes for fun discussions.
We kind of been doing this for a little while. We're kind of professionals. We might not look like it, but we have some personality to us.
I don't know. We're not big market like San Diego, Dante. So
yeah, I guess not.
We know our place. Know our place.
Yeah.
All right.
A few more rings than they do. You know, three.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I like the Padres, but y'all fans.
They can talk.
I listen, the Padres is the subject of the worst article I ever wrote, the most embarrassing article I ever wrote, and San Diego fans gave me hell. And like for about 10 minutes, I was fighting back, and that's when I was like, you know what? I'm taking the L. It did suck. You're right. I didn't delete it. It's out there. I was dogging AJ Preller. Come on, let's face it. AJ Preller, he's a scumbag. I mean, that's not wrong. But I was getting all like miffed and hot and bothered by like how they got Machado from the Sox. I don't know what my attitude was, why I suddenly decided to be a company man for 5 minutes or whatever. It tells you where I started. Where I started low this many years ago with the White Sox, how much I was in the pocket of Rick Hahn and the front office there. And look what you've done to me, guys. Hey, wait, this is a great time for a break, because guess what? We're going to talk about something else in the second half. Let's take a minute. Promise we'll be back. I'm going to try to keep these folks all up way past their bedtime. Again, even the floating head of Brian O'Neill. He'll be back with you, and he will be in your nightmares tonight. We will be back in a minute. Hang with us. White Sox fans, guess what? It is Sox Populi. Sox Pop is derived from the Latin 173. That's our podcast here. We're back, dormant for, I'm sure you were aching for more podcasts from the Southside Sox crew. And I was just denying. I kept shutting them down left and right. I said, no, we're just not, this team is now where I'm uncomfortable. I'm not happy with it. I'm dissatisfied and I miffed. But listen, we had to, you know, crawl out from under the rock where we were watching all of our comfort movies all off season in preparation, just building up that defense we need to face a season of, oh, let's just say it, minimum 100 losses. But of course, trading Dylan Cease requires, if not a massive 7-alarm emergency podcast, at least like a day after. Let's all cool down. Let's let Melissa make some more notes, some with smiley faces and exclamation points, not just cuss words. And gave time for Dante to get his first haircut in a while, looking extremely smooth, throwing it down. And, you know, likewise, Brian O'Neill. So we're all looking good. We're spiffed up. And, here to talk. Well, first half, we talked about this trade. Hey, it's free time now. We'll get maybe to how this adjusts predictions of the season, maybe toward the very end of the podcast, just in case some of you fall asleep. You don't have to hear that because, again, you want to talk about a waking nightmare. You want to talk about keeping you up with nightmares. Actually having to come up with a win total for this White Sox team is enough to make anyone scream and cry. But some other stuff came out today. And I mean, you know, it's on one hand, it's sort of not worth talking about. But on the other hand, you know, let's just exercise the toxins. Hopefully maybe we talk about it. And maybe the Jagbags over at 35th and Shields might actually tune. Oh, well, we know you are. Hey, guys. Tune into this podcast so that we can give, again, even more of a unanimous vote against whatever dumb ass idea that has you considering and then feeding it to Bob Nightingale. I thought that sort of connection should be dead now, right? Ken Williams is off dreaming of GMing in a football team, and Rick Hahn is, you know, I don't know, he's probably coaching like his, you know, son's high school team or whatever. That's cool, whatever, but I don't know where's the sources and the leaks. I guess it's just Jerry in between puffs of cigar, angrily writing off a telegram, another telegram, to send it to Bob Nightingale. Stab, rush it. Maybe sometimes singing telegram, but yeah, probably just usually telegram typed up. Feed this stuff out there, throw this stuff out there. Bob Nightingale tells us that with all these changes and the clear youth movement with the White Sox, given there's like, you know, a handful of guys, you know, older than 30 on this team, it seems. The White Sox are considering because, you know, somehow he hasn't gotten a job. Go figure. I mean, it's the easiest joke in the world. Like, why in the world doesn't he have a job, huh? And of course, not a joke, but I mean, it is an opening because it's a question that's real easy to answer. But Bob Nightingale didn't seem to answer. Coming fresh off of hyping future opportunities for the other monstrous abuser in baseball. Well, there's not just two, but the headlining one. He decided he needed to throw out the redacted as a possibility for the White Sox. And, I mean, you know, of course, staff-wise, it was met with, you could say shock. It's not shock. Outrage. You know, just a gutting feeling that we may be going through this again. And, frankly, I've already suggested to the team different and more drastic measures we can take if this crap happens again. White Sox, don't make us do that. We want to actually cover your team, even though your team is going to outright suck this year and you've sort of, like, somewhat lied through your teeth about it, even to this point, because we're supposed to believe that Iriarte is, like, you know, coming up in May. So, I mean, listen, this is the softballest of softball-y questions I could ever launch out there. But thoughts on the Bob Nightingale hype? Does he get a cut? I did not know why he's even bothering carrying water for, frankly, any player. This is not the job of even national name reporters, which, yes, somehow Bob Nightingale is, but certainly not the scumbaggiest of the scumbag class. So, you know, of course, it's making all our stomachs turn, but if you got thoughts on it, I guess this is the spot to throw it out there.
All right. Well, this is where I'm going to give the warning to hide your kids.
Okay.
Because the school is about to come. Bob Nightingale is a disgrace to the idea of journalism. Bob Nightingale gets information about the White Sox however he can. I don't know how he does it. The fucker just does. And to float, for this one to be one the organization floats out there as a possibility, this is a heat check. This is mm-hmm. a can we get away with it? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And no, you can't. Mm-hmm. There's a small contingent of fans that think about wins over morals. They're the ones that are loud on social media. There's a much larger contingent of fans like me that sees Mike Clevenger, redacted on the starting lineup. Right. When you see him on the starting lineup, I'm like, no, I'm not going to a game. I'm not mm-hmm. watching the game. Mm-hmm. One start that man had, I watched. And by that, I mean, I turned the game on after I found out he got injured because I was so happy he got injured.
Yeah.
Does that make me a bad person? Maybe. I'm fine with being a bad person if I'm happy.
He got there first.
Bad people. Hey, I'm not as bad as that person. Mm-hmm. That's fine with me. But at the end of the day, like, I don't want to watch. Like, I'm already going to be annoyed watching this team. Mm. I would just straight up not watch, like, decide to watch other things if they decide to put that man on the mound.
Yeah, angry.
I did it for an entire season. I could do it for another one, especially yeah. when you're going to be even worse.
Yeah.
I could catch the Luis Robert home runs after he hits right. them.
Right. Yeah. We're all going to be angry. We do not need to be angry and nauseous.
Yeah, like, I don't need to watch them lose and we get these fluff pieces from Nightingales and from the state media for the White Sox about how it's going to be so, it's going to, like, they're going to say, well, we're losing, but when he's out there, he's giving us 5 solid innings. It's like, no, there are things that are much more important than baseball. And this is something that's much more important than baseball.
Yeah, and Dante, you can call this virtue signaling. Anyway, they can trash me for this or whatever, but, you know, nobody else. Nobody else did what we did last year. Everybody else, and I know this is the job. I get it. I'm telling you now, and I told our staff that I would not be handling it if I was in that position. And now I know that makes me really courageous and quite a hero. And then put me in that seat, and will I really follow through on that? I'd like to think yes. Who knows? I'm not in that seat. Again, it can be looked at as virtue signaling, but the idea, my point here, the idea that everybody had to treat him like a normal, like a player on the team. How was your velocity? How did you feel out there? Were you bothered by that call? I get that's what you do with all the other normal players on the team. The idea that this guy gets lumped in, I don't care if he was top class A citizen on the White Sox this year. We know he wasn't because Lord knows if he was rescuing puppies during the season, we'd have heard about it and heard about it till Tuesday. So that didn't happen. So let's say he was average. He was an okay guy, whatever. I'm sure we're going to hear stories. They're going to come out, but okay. Let's say he was a normal guy. The idea that you got to treat him like that normal guy when we know where he came from, when we know what the White Sox did in terms of just the cartwheels they did to right from the jump last year at spring training, apologizing away this guy was absolutely reprehensible and disgusting. It did put people who weren't as courageous as Brett Valentini, not on the beat making big statements, but did put people who might otherwise not want to even get close to the guy, maybe having to stick that microphone in his face and, you know, just pray he didn't get mad because you asked about like Paul Sullivan, a guy who I struggle to be pals with and have on and off, I suppose. But Paul, you're killing me. But I mean, listen, credit due. He asked him the question of, hey, what's the deal with that, man? That's a really offensive choice you made. He didn't say it that way. He forced him to the mat to do it, and it got him pissed off. He almost snapped and made it easy for the White Sox maybe to get rid of him, although I'm not sure the White Sox under any circumstances would have got rid of that guy. And before I let, I'm sorry, Brian and Melissa get to this as well. It's even a jump, as Dante said, you know, the meatheads out there, the jagbags are like, oh, yeah, it's going to be wins for the team. Oh, yeah, get him and Bauer as well. Yeah, it's going to be wins for the team. That ain't no guarantee. The White Sox dodged a bullet. The guy was as good as he was. Credit due. He had a great season with the White Sox. There's no guarantee.
Both of them are not that good. They are mid. One of them is the side attack guy. And the other one is mid. Like, he's always been mid. Like,
yeah.
The one that got traded away from Cleveland because of just how bad of a person they are.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah. What? Yeah. Like, Cleveland taking a stand.
The fact that this is under consideration is like being spat on by this team, which we've been spat on by this team a lot of times.
Yeah.
Like, as I've said before, thanks to doing this pod and doing this work with you guys, I've become less and less of a fan. It's not me blaming you guys. It's me thanking you guys because I ain't wasting as much money and time.
Oh, we took Dante's innocence. Oh, no. Yeah, that's the truth. And you got to be sober looking at it. And boy, if this team hasn't sobered us up, holy Christ. Yeah, so, all right. Listen, I've blown off enough steam. I'm sorry. Brian, Melissa, you know, thoughts. This is such a great subject. Thoughts.
So the thing that gets me is for, I don't know, since the season ended, what we've been hearing from the team is we're changing the vibe in the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. We're cleaning house. We're you know, looking for certain types of players, and we're bringing in all these veterans who are going to help, you know, mold the young guys and all this stuff. And then you're floating out that you're thinking about bringing back Mike Clevenger. Like, what in the world? Like, those two things, how can you not see that those two things do not jive at all? Mm-hmm. And so as a fan, I'm supposed to take you seriously. I'm supposed to believe things that you tell me. Like, I mean, social media, like 90% of the people out there are screaming at them, do not do this. Like, you are so stupid. I don't know how you can't. I mean, it was bad enough last year when they got blowback and they stuck behind him and made excuses for him. And, you know, well, he was accused, but he wasn't actually convicted of anything. Ugh, whatever. Well, okay. You got away with it. Mm-hmm. We hung in there. And then you didn't, you know, he went away and everybody's like, okay. But then to just turn around and be right back in it again, it's like, I don't know how stupid can you be? Like, that's why I have Mickey Mouse on, because I'm like, this is like a freaking Mickey Mouse franchise. They talk out of one side of their mouth and they talk out of the other side of their mouth. It's just insanity. I don't even know how to describe it otherwise, but yeah.
Apologies to Disney, but yeah, listen, it fits. And yeah, good wear. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't compliment your White Sox garb there, Melissa. But yes, excellent White Sox garb. Brian, thoughts on this delightful, delicious twist?
I mean, there's nothing I can say that the three of you haven't already said. We know where we stand on this. What I kind of want to address is the idea of us at Southside Sox or other publications with redacted virtue signaling. I think Dante said, you know, there are a certain contingent of fans who are saying, I care more about wins than morals. And it's not even that they're being neutral. It's that there's a certain amount of vice signaling, which I think is far more pernicious and dangerous and awful and something that's rotten about our culture is people deliberately saying, like, I don't care about that. I'm above this. And I am proud of what we do. Like, the baseline shouldn't be this neutrality and you're either on one side. The baseline should be there are things that are wrong. And I'm going to stand up for it. And people who say, well, no, you're a child for doing that. That's everything that's fucking wrong with this culture that leads to so much viciousness and violence and misogyny and racism and terrible, terrible shit. So I don't like that term virtue signaling. It's just doing the right thing. And I'm proud that we do. And fuck Mike Clevenger and fuck the White Sox if they bring him back.
I like you saying that. That's very, very well said, Brian. And that gets at what I sloppily was trying to address. And, you know, we had our own commenters saying, I mean, at best we'd get, oh, yeah, they're doing this. Yeah, they're still doing this thing where they don't, you know, because somebody'd come in, you know, I don't know, we're like, hey, what's the deal? How come nobody, he had a good start? What are we talking about? Or what is redacted? And, you know, okay, again, I'm sorry I'm making fun of you, but, you know, come on, this is not. You came to Southside Sox, you have at least a modicum of intelligence, so come on now. But yeah, they're going to be like, oh yeah, you know, the eye roll of, you know, this is what they're doing. This is their thing. And it's, you know, okay, you know, fine. But at least know what it is. I mean, you don't have to even like it, but know what it is. Know why it is. You can come and read. You can go somewhere else and read. I mean, frankly, you're going to get hot and bothered about this. Sorry, Vox. I don't need you reading our site if you're going to get hot and bothered that we are disrespecting Mike Clevenger and not giving you his details and not tracking the speed of his fastball.
I put it like this. You still gave us a click. And also...
There's the innocence. It's gone.
Yeah, I'm happy that we are the site that says, no, we're not going to cover this asshole.
Yeah.
Because it's not, like, as it's been said already, the idea of virtual signaling is idiotic because be good people. Just try to be a good person. And look at someone like Mike Clevenger, knowing how the system in America works with the judicial system with domestic violence, and knowing that there's a low chance of him ever getting punished for the crimes that he almost certainly committed. You know, maybe just maybe we're taking some type of justice towards him, against him. Because fuck the guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't deserve to be covered. He doesn't deserve people to write about him, whether he's doing good, bad, or ugly. And this is one of the rare times we will talk about him because this just isn't what we do.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, the term virtue signaling is invented by bullies to intimidate and to fill this void in their soul and to pretend that they have an actual stance. So
I like to set it up like a wiffle ball on a tee because I know it's just something I can knock down. It's sort of like, I'll admit, it's sort of like bait, but I mean, you know, okay. It was painful. And I mean, when I say painful, I do not even mean to, water down that term because I know there are many on our staff, many out there in the in fandom where this is like literally painful. So forgive my use of the word painful, but it's painful to even read. I go over to another site and I see that you know Clevenger is being addressed or even discussed in comments. I know this is the job. Seeing the post-game quotes, the stuff tweeted out by, you know, beat writers or whatever, where he's chatting, he's got that fucking cheese-eating, like, grin, that ridiculous, you know, listen, I'm a long-haired guy, that ridiculous hair, you know, it's like a biker thing going, sorry, bikers.
He's in the room all the time. He looks like Cody Bellinger, but no one likes him.
Yeah, the bullied Cody Bellinger. Oh, that's what turned him that way. No, but I mean, using that the wrong term, I'm sure, but painful to see that, like, just uncomfortable. And there were so many times where I wanted to actually sort of reply, like, what do you, just something. I want to lash out about it. It's like, well, at the same time, this is what's expected. This is what people are okay with. You know, I'm not, if it makes our site weird, you know, I am sorry for that, but we're going to be weird.
We're going to do it. I love it.
That guy. Okay, let me throw a speed round at you, and then we'll hopefully never speak to the guy in brackets and redacted ever again. If the White Sox, this is what I feel, if the White Sox actually made, not just this goes away or, you know, whatever, because I'm going to be optimistic here that this ain't happening, but not just it goes away or they're going to, oh, well, that didn't work. Let's just ellipses this away. I would like them actually, if this really is, I mean, there is a chance, not likely because I'm sure he has actually the physical telegrams from Jerry Reinsdorf, but I mean, there's a chance that this was insight, insider's insight. Oh, these writers do it all the time. Insider's insight, just presuming, oh, hey, I'm going to do some math. They're not going to want Trevor Bauer, but they're familiar with Mike Clevenger. They kept him all year. So you know what? One plus one must equal. Mm-hmm. This could have been rogue. Nightingale, fine, whatever. But I really need the White Sox to actually make some kind of, I mean, not official. I'm not pouting and posturing here, but I do want them to make it clear this was never happened. And they could do that now and lie, and I won't know any better. But I need them even to lie. This is a good lie. Yeah. I need them to lie and say this was never going to happen. Because then, I mean, I'm still not going to feel comfortable because I think the smoke is still there and probably didn't happen. But at least them saying, oh, crap, I saw Melissa's 90%. Oh, no, I don't like this. You know, come out, you know, go through the motions of saying, oh, absolutely not. What was, you know, we're not floating that out there. And I do need to see that. Now I'm going to ask all of you, is that, if what do you think will happen? And if that happens, can we go back to, you know, one day without a work accident with the White Sox?
Let it happen. I mean, it's not going to happen. Here's the thing. I don't think it's going to happen. The idea that it was floated out there is extremely wild, and it's what we should be used to, but I'm not used to still. It's infuriating that they will even float out there. The White Sox don't need to make a statement because at the end of the day, that's just not the type of thing they do. But if someone asks about it, I want them to honestly answer it. That's all I ask for. That's all I want. I don't expect it, but it's what I want.
I don't know why there should be a manila folder with his name on any longer. That one needed to be shredded. So I don't know why I'd be like, well, you know, we're just doing our diligence. I mean, wait, that's some type of stuff they might say, right? You know, it's not like denial without denial. We got to consider everybody, right? No, you don't. No, you don't. Especially when your team is going to be garbage. It's going to be dog food. So come on now. Sorry, dogs. Melissa, Brian, what do you expect them to do? And what would make you content that this sort of like gets, I don't say erased because we'll never forget, but sort of erased.
I think they walk backwards out the door. I think this was like a thrown out there. And I mean, we do make fun of them for being dumb, but they had to see the reaction. They had to see the reaction was like, you're idiots, don't do it. And so I don't think they're going to say anything about it. I don't think, and they're just going to walk backwards out the door and hope that nobody asks them about it. And we know how the beat is, and I doubt anybody asks them about it.
Good call there. Good call.
I think it is going to just disappear. Like it never even happened.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I think Melissa nailed it again. Yeah. Dante, that's just no.
Imagine if you're the guy who does ask about it, because then suddenly you could maybe end up getting, you know, now you're going to be like the pro club. Even if you just ask a question, be like, I'm the guy who brought it. I'm the pro Clevenger guy. Nobody. I mean, I think Melissa's point's right. Everybody's a little too frightened or comfortable to ask. But even on top of that, I'm not sure I want to be the guy, you know, the courageous guy to be like, hey, what about you know, because then suddenly you're going to be the guy who got the White Sox aside. Mike Clevenger, yeah, and then you have to retire and you have to move out of the city. So, yeah, we don't want that to happen. Any of those guys on the beat, they're all fine enough folk. All right, well, you know, we're winding up, so let's, you know, I don't usually let everyone in on the inner workings of the Southside Sox baseball site, but as we speak, we are preparing to make our predictions for the 2024 season. And of course, they're going to be horrifying, at least when it comes to the White Sox, but we still have to make those predictions and like pick who the team MVP will be or who the worst player will be, because that's going to be tough. So we're going to do all that stuff. But anticipating that, again, don't want to program or like put a thumb on the scale in any way here. However, with recent events, let's just go around and get an idea of what right now you're leaning toward the Chicago White Sox, given that this is probably, you know, smoke them if you got them at this point. This is the team they got, you know. I don't think they're trading Luis Weber. I don't know. It could be. Who knows? Probably not any big changes. Michael Soroka going to be your opening day starter or somebody like that. Okay, so let's start with Melissa. We're going to go hair team first. Melissa, record right now, if pressed, if tonight's the deadline for your predictions, what is the White Sox record going to be in 2024?
I think they're going to be worse than they were last year.
Okay.
And I'm going to say, but because not like a lot worse, because I mean, they were pretty bad. I'm going to say 102-60.
All right. Still crossing the, it's like Melissa can't think, okay, ever in my lifetime have they not even won. So you're going to just say they're just never going to dip below 60. That's.
Yeah. I think they're just going to stumble into enough of
baseball.
Yeah. I mean, and with a little bit better defense. And I mean, honestly, the guys who are most likely going to make the roster that have been pitching this spring have been pitching pretty well, actually. Now, I mean, granted, they've only pitched two or three innings at a time. So get them in for five or six and it can be a total show.
Against, you know, against average double A competition. But hey, you know, the White Sox, you can only strike out who you're facing. So, you know, hey, yeah, strike them
exactly.
out. You know.
So I think they're going to stumble into a few that's not going to take them under 60 losses. So
okay.
I'm going with 102-60.
Sorry, Jackie, we don't see you on a podcast at least for a few more days. So that's good vibes. Sage Molenbach right there saying it's going to be at least 60 wins. Yikes. Okay, let's move counterclockwise on my grid, and we're going to the disembodied head of Brian O'Neill. What is it going to be? Nightmare scenario, minor nightmare. Last year, let's remind everyone, a year ago, you were like, I think you and Matt, you know, some folks were like, listen, I'm rooting for this team. I want them to do well. Yeah, I think, yeah, they're going to crack 90 wins. And, you know, that wasn't crazy. You know, all of us snickered behind your back. But, I mean, you know, I mean, that's not crazy. I get it. So because they burned you, are you going to singe them the other way? Or are you still thinking more along Melissa's lines of, like, really, how much more basement room is there?
It's not a lot more basement room. I was kind of inspired by, before the podcast, we saw Melissa had a full page of notes and everything. And so I was kind of doing in the break some calculations. And
during the break.
My theory for this team is that this is
a doing
some calculations. I was thinking it.
Yeah, the metrics. Right, right.
I don't have a full number yet. I still need to crunch some things.
Yes, sure.
Yeah. I'm going to go with 61 wins.
Whoa, sabermetrician Brian O'Neill. I love it. So technically, I mean, just vaguely, again, you know, I'm no more an advanced math. Well, no, listen, I'm dragging you down when I say that. I'm less of a math brain than you. So I think it's safe to say that now we have like bad equaling, you know, roughly, you know, the BA metric is 61 wins. All right, that's cool. That's good, because then, again, you're showing your work. That's what we need to see. Melissa's way ahead of us on that. You're showing your work. Now, Dante, no pressure, not actually to, like, show your notes during the break, but I have a feeling you're going to be a little angrier than the 1661 win. So where are you at with this team at this moment?
51.
Ooh, doggy. Yeah.
Oh, just that number.
Woo, Dante!
That's almost mathematically impossible, and I love it.
When is the last time have the White Sox ever only won?
It's a number that they're not going to reach, probably, but let's get bold. Let's get bold. This team is going to be horrible. They're going to be, at best, the third worst team in baseball, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, if Washington or Oakland tries, they could potentially be better. I'm just factoring, like, the thing is, the Luis Robert thing, like, having Luis Robert, and if Aloy, and if people stay healthy.
Right.
They could be better. But
right.
We've been doing this for how many years about health?
Yeah.
Somebody on
Junior is gonna have an amazing year. It's gonna finish like number four in MVP voting. This team's gonna be absolutely abysmal. Aloy and or Yoan will not be White Sox by the end of the season.
Woo!
And I see somebody that loves both of them.
Yeah.
I don't want it to happen, but I see the writing on the wall. It's rebuild four gear rebuild.
Yeah. So, somebody on the site today was talking themselves into Gavin Sheets being the okay or best option in right field. So that type of thinking is going to get you. Sorry, Melissa, and sorry, Saban, Patricia, and Brian, but that is going to get them closer to that, you know, roughly like 110 level if you really think that somehow that guy's not going to turn singles into triples and fly balls into doubles and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, this team is supposed to be improved defensively. I don't think he's going to be playing a lot of right field, but he has been, you know, playing a little bit. Okay, well, thanks for stealing my thunder, Dante. I think I've pretty much been the, you know, high, low, whatever, predictor all off season, and now, you know, you've embarrassed me. I, all along, to be fair, have been saying when they still had a guy named Dylan Cease on the team and Redacted was nowhere near the clubhouse, I was saying record-breaking 107 losses. I will up that because, again, I know there's not that much room in the basement. They're pretty much in the basement at this point. Maybe they're not in that weird puddle in the basement that always, like, shows up even when there's not storms. Okay, they're not in the puddle, but they're pretty much in the basement. So I will up it to 108. I don't think I can go 111. Dante is predicting a team 5 losses worse than any ever, and I'm the unlucky one who's actually lived through technically, I was not aware enough to be. My dad probably in the womb put a White Sox cap on me, but I was not a fully actualized fan enough to know what was happening in 1970 when they won a ridiculously low 56 games and lost 106. Is that math? I don't know. They lost 106, so that's 5 losses worse. Dante's saying I'm still predicting they break that record, and I think that's an interesting. I'm not a betting man, I'm not a gambler, but that's an interesting bet.
It's a stretch, Armstrong right now.
It's a stretch. I mean, you know, Michael Soroka's still healthy. Yeah, right. That's okay. Yeah, all right. Go, Michael. You know, there's a lot of stuff right now that looks nice. It's spring. Yeah, you know, try playing in the snow at the end of March. I'm sorry, Chicagoans. You know, and, you know, let's see how these guys hold up. All right, so Dante has passed me. I know now maybe for a fact I won't be the high loss predictor this year, but it's going to be a very different looking slate because I think everyone had the White Sox at least at 75 wins last year, and I'm not sure anyone will have the White Sox at 75 wins this year. good job, front office. You're really doing a bang-up job. White Sox, okay, I guess you can stop listening now. You know, we won't say anything mean that you've got to, like, make notes and type up for Jerry any longer because we're going to wrap up. Got a hot new podcast coming next week. Melissa's going to be a part of that. Hey, you want to tease that, Melissa? You don't have to, but if you want to, hey, go ahead.
Yeah, it's going to drop next week. And it's for the ladies. And we're going to have some just fun baseball talk, but just fun girl time too. And yeah, I'm super excited about it. So.
Can't wait. That's awesome.
Thanks.
It's been a long time since we've had that sort of podcast on our airwaves. Long since past time for us having that. And the exciting thing is, though she's not here with us, Crystal O'Keefe and Bailey Von I'm going to put an N in there. Is it Schneider or Sider? Schneider, I believe. Bailey Von Schneider. A Boston Red Sox fan. They have their Soxy Chicks podcast. You're probably familiar with it. You've probably come across it before. Well, that is now going to be on our Fans First Sports Network as well. So pretty much on a weekly basis, you know, sorry, guys. you're stuck at the door. We're going to be opening up in a little bit different way. And it's long since past time. So thank you for helping spearhead that. Melissa, you will catch her maybe in the next podcast on this playlist. Probably is. I can't imagine there's going to be breaking news that we're going to like be dragged out over the weekend to have to discuss and get angry about. God, I hope not. White Sox, don't do that. So yeah, next podcast on the playlist is probably going to be Melissa and company. There's going to be some good vibes in there, I think, maybe. Well, you know there's going to be good vibes because it's you know, folks from our crew. And they all pretty much have good vibes. You know, Jackie, she raises the bar, but come on. Yeah. All good nature, all fun stuff. So
it's going to be high energy for sure. Lots of laughing. Yeah.
Exactly what we want. So, yeah, okay, pretty much say goodbye to the Mothership Podcast. You've got a new favorite in town. But, hey, it was nice having you with us. And, you know, if you decide to trickle back here and there, that's great. But otherwise, if you shift your devotion to Ladies' Night, knock yourselves out, because at least somebody's getting your Chicago White Sox attention. Frankly, I'm fatigued talking about this goddamn team, as that's not quite obvious. And I think looking at the, well, I won't say dead eyes, but the fatigue in all of us, it's not just because we've been doing a podcast for an hour about a team that, you know, is going to lose 111 or whatever games. But, you know, come on, it's the White Sox. You're just grinding us down, guys. But thank you out there for watching, listening, reading, whatever. Hey, don't be scared to comment. What's going on there? What, is everybody's commenting button broken? Come on. Don't be afraid to react to some of the stuff we write. You can't agree with everything. I mean, you should agree with everything, but you can't be agreeing with everything. Hey, throw us a bone. Come on now. But thanks for listening, watching. Thanks to Brian O'Neill floating about there in space. Dante Jones looking tight. Melissa Sage Wombach, she's like, whatever, it's my swan song. I'm out of here. I'm moving on to better days. And I don't blame you, Melissa, but thanks to the three of you for joining here on Sox Populi number 173, where we discuss once again how the White Sox disappoint, frustrate, aggravate, and so on. So stay tuned. 174 is probably right around the corner, or I don't know, like season's coming up, so we're going to have to do something soon. We will have pregame podcast for opening day, postgame podcast for opening day, blah, 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 blah. More podcasts than you even know what to do with. Sometimes it'll just be all women. Hey, man, that's really cool. Sometimes it'll be people who are even fans of other teams. Hey, that's cool. And sometimes you'll even get to see Brian O'Neill show his work and flex his sabermetric muscles. Catch you next time for 174. Thanks for being with us for now.